The following announcement has been paid for by Journey into Wrestling. Things seem to be changing around here, and I'm talking podcasts, brother.
Journey into Comics Network and no JIW? Where's the wrestling?
That's just it, brah. We're making a comeback. JIW is taking over.
Butt stuff, podcastrophe, the poor rapport, all these new guys on the scene. We're about to show them what podcasting is all about, Chico.
Why don't you tell them when they can hear us, Nate?
Every other Wednesday, right here on the Journey into Wrestling Network.
Anything less is just too civilized. New World Order. The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and depending on when you're listening, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. You are listening to The Poor Rapport. I am your host, Andrew Poor, and I want to thank you for listening. There's been a lot of news this week. Big thing is that The Poor Rapport is now a weekly show, so every Tuesday you can come here and get your fix on all things news and topics of personal interest. So, I'm going to jump right in. This week, there was a few big movie news. Turns out that Liam Neeson is going to star in a movie called Mark Felt, The Man Who Brought Down the White House. Now, Mark Felt, which was commonly known at the time as Deep Throat. So, Deep Throat was the big during the Watergate scandal during the Nixon administration. So, he's going to play Mark Felt in a movie directed by Peter Landsman, which I'm not really familiar with his work. But it's going to take basically the story that you might remember from the movie All the President's Men and kind of take Deep Throat out of the shadows and put now Mark Felt as like the center, putting him in the light. So it'll be a little bit different, but you know, if you're anything like me, you enjoy a nice political thriller, and historical movies are always something I enjoy, so I'm definitely in it for this. And with Liam Neeson announcing recently that he's done with action movies, he says he's getting to an age where it says it's not right for a man at his age to be doing action movies when there's plenty of young people to do it. So I guess people like Schwarzenegger and Stallone have yet to get that memo. Another movie that news that I found out recently is that Leonardo DiCaprio and his longtime collaborator Martin Scorsese are doing a Teddy Roosevelt biopic. Now, I haven't seen a Teddy Roosevelt movie that I can think of. I think the most recent memory I have is when Robin Williams played a statue that came to life of Teddy Roosevelt in Night at the Museum. So I'm all for it. I love Teddy Roosevelt. He's probably one of my favorite presidents. I have numerous books about him, including like a 3-volume series on his life from like a childhood through his presidency and beyond. So I'm definitely all for this. And I know Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese have yet to do a bad movie, in my opinion. So I'm definitely in the bag for this. So, and this is also coming on the heels of, like, the whole thing that I talked about in a previous episode about Martin Scorsese and Todd Phillips wanting to do a Joker origin movie, and that Warner Brothers was trying to use Martin Scorsese to get Leonardo DiCaprio to play the title character in a Jack Napier way. Jack Napier was the name of Jack Nicholson's Joker in the 1989 Batman movie, so there's definitely been a lot of news coming out. I know Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese are also wanting to do an adaptation of Devil in the White City, which is the story of the World's Fair in Chicago. And it shows that story as well as the story of serial killer H.H. Holmes and the murder house that he created. And we'll get to see Leonardo DiCaprio playing more of a villain this time. But least in this story, it's a very sophisticated villain who comes off as a very charming person, so I think Leonardo DiCaprio is more than well-versed to take on this role. So I'm definitely all for this. So I think we'll have to see how this goes. And it kind of comes to one thing. I know I said biopic instead of, like, biopic, and I really don't know what the proper thing is. It's a biography, it's a biopic, or is it biopic? It kind of depends on what you're thinking. So getting back to that, another bit of news that kind of is kind of unfortunate news was that Playboy founder Hugh Hefner passed away last night at the time of this recording. Hugh Hefner, as I said before, is the founder of Playboy, brought to life the Playboy magazine back in the, I believe it was the 60s, and then kind of started off this whole sexual revolution. And according to a lot of celebrities that come out, and of course, he was definitely a champion of free speech and civil rights, and was all for kind of the freedom of sex or sexual freedom. And he definitely had a lot of insight. I know no one can see that bunny symbol that is synonymous with their brand and not think of Playboy, regardless of if you've ever read the magazine or have been to the website, watched that show, I think Girls Next Door, that was like on in the 2000s. I think I caught a few of those episodes where it's Hefner in his house living with his multiple girlfriends. I think at that point he was still in his 80s. So I think Hugh Hefner is a man who's definitely left a long legacy, and I think there's definitely going to be a lot more to see from what happens after this. I know there was the whole thing with they sold the mansion to developer with condition that the sale wouldn't be final until his death, so now that we're at this point, there's going to be that discussion of what's going to happen to his house. Are they going to tear it down? Are they going to kind of make it a museum? I don't remember. I remember reading about that article a while back, but I don't really remember what the final resolution was that's going to happen to that property. But as things happen, when someone passes away, things that might have been significant to them may not be significant to the person who picks up after them. It's kind of the opposite of the thing of one man's treasure is another man's trash. So I'll leave it at that. So I saw something kind of funny on Twitter the other day, or last night when I was looking through it, and it said, in honor of Hugh Hefner, people everywhere are going to be reading their magazines at half-mast. Ba-dum-bum. Speaking of Twitter, Twitter recently announced that they're going to expand their character limit from 140 characters to 280, allowing people to definitely put a lot more content out there, put more of their mind, and they're not going to be limited to the 140 characters that have been the norm since its creation. And I've already seen it today on a lot of those verified users' Twitter accounts, like certain like football team celebrities have already had access. You've seen that they've been pushing the character limit just to say they have it now. And this is kind of, I guess, non-news for me. I feel like people are still going to be posting short messages. You might get some people are now going to post longer messages. And I know that our current president's probably going to definitely take advantage of being able to say more in one tweet than he can with a series of tweets. But I think we're still going to get those series of tweets. He's just going to have a lot more to say. But I think it'll be nice. I have Twitter for both personally and for the show. So you can follow me at the Poor Rapport. My big thing recently was I did a live tweeting of the Emmys. So that was on episode 4. So you can hear me talk about that. Or you can go to my Twitter page and see the long series of tweets I go through as the winners were picked and as we kind of discussed what was going on. So yeah, I don't know how I feel about the 280 character limit. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure most people won't even ever come close to using the full limit. Some might, but we'll kind of have to wait and see. But I think it's going to be probably another week or so before it probably rolls out to the everyman user. I guess speaking of Trump and Twitter, there's been a series of events that I'm going to kind of run through because I hate having my show have Trump as a big aspect of it, but he keeps doing things that seem to be newsworthy or things that should be brought up, and I can't just gloss over that just because I may disagree with a lot of what's going on. So, as you remember in my episode that dropped on Tuesday, episode 4, I talked about how Trump was giving a speech in front of the UN. So Trump gave this speech where he kind of talked about pro-America, where he said, "I will always put America first," which has been his big stance on all of his stuff. It's always the America first. Is everything he's doing is that way. So he did that, and he said that, "I will always put America first, and I know you will always put your countries first." So he did that, which is kind of a good statement. That's somewhat presidential. But then he goes and attacks North Korea, condemning Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, calling him Rocket Man, saying that if they don't stop what they're doing with, like, their rocket stuff, they will basically destroy them and wipe them off the face of the earth, or they will use the full thing to kind of eliminate them. And then that evolved into Friday, that North Korea's said that the way Trump's speech and what he said on Twitter is essentially a declaration of war. Trump flew out a couple of fighter jets further north than have been in this century. So we have two very strong-willed people in power that don't like the other person. I think they're slowly pushing us towards nuclear war. So I'm definitely afraid for what could happen from this. And I think Trump is just so egotistical and wants to kind of get the wins and wants to just push his agenda that he's not thinking of diplomacy and good foreign policy and this whole thing of mutually assured destruction where we don't mess with each other, no innocent people get harmed kind of thing. So that kind of happened, and then Trump, trying to be the person to deflect, wanted to get everyone's mind off what happened with the whole thing with North Korea and all that. So he then attacked Steph Curry, because Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors were invited to the White House to meet the president, had the whole thing that most winning teams do, go there to meet the president, have a little party, president talks, they talk. Usually they bring like a jersey or some kind of piece that has the president's name on it. I know like the Cubs did it for when they won the World Series. I think the Blackhawks have done it, and the Patriots did it. So it's just kind of something that's been a tradition, and Steph Curry was hesitant to do it because he didn't necessarily agree with the president, and Trump being the person he is and viewing this as kind of attacking him personally, said in a tweet that, I'm trying to remember, it was, being invited to the White House is a great honor, you hesitated, so therefore, invitation withdrawn. So it's, and then that led to another NBA player, LeBron James, was tweeting something along the lines of calling him a bum and saying, he said no to invitation, so there's no invite to rescind and that whole thing. So that caused that whole problem. And then the Golden State Warriors released a statement saying Trump's response to Steph Curry makes it seem like the Golden State Warriors aren't invited as a team, so the team will not be going. And then I think later that day, Trump then announced that the Pittsburgh Penguins, who recently won the Stanley Cup, will be coming, and said they're a great team and all that stuff. So definitely Trump always wanted to take a win for the day, even with all this. Then Trump went on, I believe some point on Friday or Saturday, this has all been happening over a few days, but the way Trump is, there's always going to be news every day of the week. So then Trump went, made a speech attacking Colin Kaepernick, the former quarterback, I believe, of the 49ers. I could be wrong. I'm not a big football person, so you'll have to forgive me if I said the wrong team. So Colin Kaepernick started, like, I believe last year, started kneeling during the national anthem in protest for the way black citizens have been kind of getting they're under a lot of issues with the police, and there was injustice, and they were being shot and they were being killed for doing minor things or a simple traffic stop that turned into kind of a tragedy. So he's been dealing for that in kind of hopes to bring to light kind of the injustice in the police system. So Trump decided to take a stand on that, saying that NFL players who kneel for the national anthem, they're kind of an affront to America, they're disrespecting the troops and the flag, and that the NFL owners should fire them. And I believe he said the words, I think in almost in direct relation to Colin Kaepernick, to fire that son of a bitch. And as we all know, for people who follow football, is that Colin Kaepernick is currently not an NFL player. He wasn't getting a new contract for this season. No other team picked him up. Apparently, he's been a fairly decent football player. He seems immemorable to me as a football player. The only reason I know who he is because of the kneeling and what he's been doing and the political stance he's been making. Sorry, I need a drink of water. It can get a little dehydrating when you talk by yourself for a while. He said, basically, told owners to, you should make a statement saying, like, you will fire any player who doesn't kneel for, or stand for the national anthem and kind of support our troops. And this really caught fire with a lot of people. I remember seeing all over Facebook people who saying, like, all these NFL players should be standing, that they should respect the troops, and that they're doing, what they're doing is disrespecting the troops, and people who have troops in their family, and all this are just condemning their actions, and saying, like, you have a job, you're paid, you're an entertainer, you should respect your fans, and respect your country, who give you the freedom to play this sport. Even though the military kind of fights for our freedom to do, essentially, live free and do what we want. Yes, you probably, you definitely should respect the troops, and a lot of it is that we're not, that Colin Kaepernick's thing is he's not disrespecting the troops. He's kneeling to bring to light something about a problem with America and its injustice towards black people. So kind of with that, so after Trump made the statement, then on Sunday with the first round of football, a lot of teams were kneeling, some with their owners, in an affront to what Trump has said and the statement he made regarding them. I know for the Chicago Bears game, the Steelers stayed in the stadium, and then you had one player you could see in the tunnel who was there for the national anthem. His image was plastered all over social media. Because he is a former Army Ranger, I believe. I don't remember his name, unfortunately. I'm sorry. I didn't write that down before I started talking. So, I apologize for that. So, there's a picture of him that he was the only member of the team who served in the military. And there's a whole thing about him saying that it was passed around. His jersey and stuff with his name and number on it became the highest-selling article of clothing through all the sites. And then he came out and made a statement saying he didn't want to be this person, how he just wanted to look to see where the flag was, and then they caught him on camera, and because the national anthem was already playing, the rest of the team wasn't come out, and you couldn't see them because they were just in the tunnel enough to be blocked. So what he said, he made his team look bad, he made his coaching staff look bad, because he asked for special permission to go out there to see where the flag was, and it kind of became an image to be shared to back up Trump's position. And I know there's some people it's a very divisive issue, and there's people who believe that the kneeling, like I said, is kind of spitting in the face of the troops and the people who fight for our freedoms, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. But you saw that on Sunday, a lot of people stood together. You had some men, even though they were standing, they were linked arms with each other. you had, in the case of the Dallas Cowboys, they kneeled together right before the national anthem started and then stood up. And then I think Trump made a Twitter post saying, kneeling before the national anthem is fine, standing must follow, or something like that. And then Trump had to deal with the questions of, is this a race thing? Because a predominant portion of the people that were kneeling were black athletes. So Trump had to say, no, it's not a race thing. It's not a race thing. He's just defending himself there. And surprisingly enough, due to the amount of people that are actually kneeling and they were protesting, and they complained enough that DirecTV offered NFL Sunday Ticket members a refund for those that they quoted as traumatized by the kneeling and quiet protesting, which I think is kind of ridiculous, because one common thing of a lot of conservative people say is that liberals are triggered, they're snowflakes, they can't handle this, they need safe spaces. But you see something like this where a bunch of people were so upset that they complained to their cable provider that what they were seeing was traumatizing to them and demanding a refund. You all saw people that were burning their team's jerseys or their memorabilia in their own little protest. And you can see that it's kind of ridiculous. They were, in a sense, triggered by the events they saw and were reacting for it. And burning your items doesn't hurt anyone except yourself. Like, you purchase that item, the team already has your money, and just burning it just means you don't have it. I could buy 5,000 copies of a book that I disagree with and burn them in a pile, and I could be like, yes, I'm putting an end to whatever this book is, like the book burnings of old. And it doesn't matter. The book publisher still got my money for the 5,000 books I bought. I know it's kind of a ridiculous example, but that's kind of how it feels. Like, you purchased this, you got their, they have your money. Like, I remember there were people, it's kind of a side story, is that J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books and the creator of the whole Harry Potter world, movies, all of that, is a very liberal person. She talks about it on Twitter and stuff and condemned Trump during the election. And a lot of her fans said, like, the things she's been saying on Twitter and stuff, they're going to go out there and, like, burn their books and movies. And she had a very smug response. Something about, I don't think she actually said, like, I have your money, but that's kind of how it sounded. But she said, like, don't, make sure you don't breathe in the fumes. Like, it doesn't matter. That's not offending her. She might be a little hurt, but you read the books, you got the story, and then to just burn it just means you don't have it anymore. It doesn't affect her one way or the other. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist just because you destroyed it. So that was that, and then and that's all I'm going to talk about, the whole kneeling thing. My personal opinion is you should stand for the flag, for the country, but I don't think that there needs to be a national anthem before a football game anyway, or any sporting event. Yes, it's a sense of national pride. I think that should be a thing that's done for big events like the Olympics or any of the world-level events, or maybe special events like the Super Bowl or the World Series or like the NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup Finals, all of that. I think those are times that that should be necessary, but I think the typical random game doesn't really need it. Yes, I believe we should do it, but I mean, I think that it's still a form of entertainment, and like, you don't see movies starting out with a national anthem. You don't see plays starting out with a national anthem. It's just unusual that it's been the norm this long that all sporting events, whether from a Little League baseball game all the way to the World Series, have the national anthem. I mean, I'll stand. If I'm at a game and the national anthem comes on, I will stand up with my hand over my heart, take my hat off if I'm wearing one, and I will stand for the national anthem. But I don't know necessarily if it's necessary. I mean, I remember in a long time ago, all movies you're going to see had kind of a military movie, and that was like back in the old time when like that was how people got their news information. They kind of had a little thing to kind of entice you to maybe serve, and maybe that's the reason it started in the enforced sporting events, because a lot of young red-blooded men watch sporting events, and those are the men they need in the military, or maybe something like that. I'm not quite sure, but that's just kind of my stance on it. I know Blaine of Podcast, we kind of talked about it with his guest on his episode 5, which you might, I believe it dropped the same day as I'm recording. So, and I know Blaine's views and my views are kind of similar. So, yeah, there's definitely going to hear some of this on across the network about this event, because it's definitely a big divisive issue. But we'll kind of see what plays out. I know there's another football game tonight. I think it's the Bears-Packers game. So, I guess go Bears if you're a Bears fan. Go Packers if you're a Packers fan. All that fun stuff. But we'll have to see kind of how the rest of the weekend goes with regards to that whole the NFL kneeling thing. If so, I know a lot of it was in direct reaction to what Trump said. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of that develops over the next, I guess, the rest of the football season. And that just drives through the weekend. So I've been talking since the talk of Thursday with the UN speech, and here we are now, like Monday. So Trump has been actively campaigning for this Alabama Senator Luther Strange, who was in a like a special election to get the Republican nominee to run for, I believe it was the seat that Jeff Sessions had, if I'm not mistaken. So he put all of his support behind Luther Strange, made a series of tweets about it supporting him. And then the election came and Luther Strange lost to his challenger, Roy Moore. So Trump, instead of accepting defeat and saying the horse I backed in this race lost, I'll move forward and try again or whatever, he decided to delete his series of tweets that were all in support of Luther Strange, and instead released a series of tweets supporting Roy Moore, and then claiming it kind of as a win. So it's another thing of Trump not accepting defeat or not accepting the criticism, and instead changing it, flipping it, spinning it, and saying, oh, I still supported this guy, he's the guy I wanted instead, he won, I win, everything's good. So that was like Monday and Tuesday, and there also was the Graham Cassidy bill, which I talked about on episode 4, which was the Republican Party's latest attempt at repealing the Affordable Care Act, which is commonly known as Obamacare. This has been their fourth attempt at trying to repeal it, and they chose not to vote on it, which basically in the terms of government and lawmaking is that it was going to fail. They didn't want to go through the issue of calling a roll to see it fail again, because they knew they didn't have the votes. And then Trump then came out in an interview saying, we had the votes, but we wanted to hold off on it, kind of iron a few things. And we had a senator who was in the hospital who we wanted him to be there to cast his vote. So we're putting it off for him, so to speak. That was kind of weird, especially since the senator who was claimed was in the hospital wasn't actually in the hospital at the time. He had a simple operation. It was at home resting. So that's kind of his whole thing. Like, well, he's in the hospital. And then it's like, the guy who's actually, he claimed was in the hospital, goes on Twitter, is like, I'm not in the hospital, I'm at home resting with my family, look forward to being back in the people's house to do his whole thing. So it was just Trump kind of giving an excuse to the reason they held off, or that they're holding off, that they're going to drop it indefinitely. So this has been definitely the fourth failure in trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which is something that Trump said he would repeal on his day one in office. And I read articles and stuff as I was kind of preparing for this podcast that was like, I think one of the two, Graham or Cassidy, said it took them 18 months to put Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, into action. It's going to take us time to repeal it. So it sounds like they're definitely accepting defeat on that, and they're probably going to move over to their next plan. Fifth time is the charm. Should I just also go for this podcast? Fifth time is the charm, but I think it's been going well, the podcast, and I'm thankful to all my listeners, and I definitely look forward to keep bringing you new podcasts every week now, which I'm excited to finally have a weekly podcast, because a podcast that focuses on news is hard to do every 2 weeks because there's just so much information to try and go through. And I was pushing hour-long episodes where I can only touch the surface of what has happened. I can only focus on the big events instead of these small stories that are, I find, more interesting. But with Trump, there are no small stories, just small hands, I guess. So then on Wednesday, which was yesterday at the time of my recording, and about a week ago by the time you actually listen to this, so I remember talking in an earlier episode about the hurricanes that had gone through and did damage to Texas and Florida and the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and all of the islands kind of in the Caribbean area or in the Gulf. Puerto Rico got absolutely devastated by Hurricane Maria. They're still without power, and it's been a week since it made landfall. And I feel for all the people there. There's, I believe, millions of people there that are struggling. There's people in hospitals that are running on backup generators. There's people who can't get their medicine. There are people who can't get their oxygen. There are people who can't keep their insulin refrigerated to be able to provide themselves. And there's people that have lost everything to this. I saw pictures of people in their apartment buildings, but there's an entire wall of their apartment complex missing. And they're just trying to go about their lives. And they're, a lot of their supplies aren't coming in. And then there's the issue with the Jones Act, which is something that prevents stuff from other countries and other people from being shipped to them to provide aid. And then it kind of came out today that Trump was going to waive the Jones Act and allow the supplies and the products and stuff to repair their infrastructure to go and to kind of start putting them back together. And this is only a 10-day waiver that will have to go through another process to be extended again. So Trump decided that it's 10 days is enough to get them what they need to get them back and running when they had so much devastation. Oh, if you can do a simple Google search for Puerto Rico and Hurricane Maria, you can see all of the devastations that they're going through. You see roads that are completely washed out, bridges that aren't there anymore, and you see people walking through the river in the shallow section to get from one side to the other, or what remains of the bridge. It's just, it's heart-wrenching to kind of see that. And then for Trump to then criticize the country and like condemning their financialism and stuff and saying that's almost make it sound like they did this to themselves by not being financially responsible or not preparing for this, for something that it's something they haven't experienced in over 100 years of this level of hurricane, and then to kind of brush it off and then not really talk about it. I mean, it's been a week since then, and now he's finally doing something about it because there's been enough public outcry for that, and he finally says he has to deal with it. And I guess with that, I'm really going to just leave it on the Trump stuff. I feel like every episode I've done, I've had to talk about Trump, and Trump just does things that... Sorry, more water. Trump just does things that can be infuriating. And I don't want to talk about Trump every week, but this stuff needs to be brought up. The stuff that he's doing, the stuff... Like, sometimes I just don't know how to react to the stuff he does. And I know we'll get through it. We're a strong country, but it's kind of crazy all the stuff we've had to deal with in just the first, 6 months of his presidency? What are the next 3.5 years going to be like? Is he going to make it that long? I know he's going to, if he makes it through his term unscathed, he's going to run again. And I think the party will support him because you always support an incumbent for president. So, and I don't see the Democratic Party having a strong enough challenger in 2020 to kind of to go up against him, someone that can handle Trump's personality. There'll at least be things that he's done in his first term to be able to criticize, but the thing we see is basically anything that Trump says, there's going to be a fraction of people in the U.S. that are going to support it wholeheartedly, 100%. And it kind of makes you afraid for what's going to happen. But we have to have hope that we'll all get through this. And I guess with that, I'm going to close my Trump section of the podcast. So one thing that's exciting that I'm doing actually this weekend is that my fiance and I have tickets to go see Stephen King speak. Him and his son are doing a book tour for their upcoming book, Sleeping Beauties. Trump on the brain. I apologize. So Stephen King and his son have been kind of traveling around the U.S. and doing this book tour. They kind of do like a Q&A session, kind of like an evening of, where they'll talk about the book, talk about the relationship, talk about probably how they created the book. And by going to this event, you also get a free copy of the book. And then there's like a 1 in 400 chance that one of your copies could be signed by both of them, which would be amazing. I love Stephen King. His writing will just draw you in. He really does crazy horror. And then a world that we live in where there's a lot of actual horrors, being able to kind of get absorbed into a book about fictional horror is really nice. And Trump, or I'll keep saying Trump, sorry. And Stephen King has seen a resurgence this summer with two adaptions of his works being moderate successes on by average. The Gunslinger with Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey wasn't The Gunslinger, it was The Dark Tower. It wasn't a massive success, but I think it still, I think, paid for his budget and wasn't, I think, criticized too much in the public. But then what came out recently was the new It adaption for, like, the first half of the story, which did fantastic, broke records, and everyone's loved it. I haven't seen it, unfortunately, and I hope to soon. My fiancé just didn't want to see that movie in theaters. So, kind of one of those things you have to do when you're in a committed relationship is kind of respect their wishes. So I'll definitely be renting and watching it when it comes out, and I'll probably end up owning it, like I own a lot of other of Stephen King's movies along with his books. So I'm definitely excited for that, and I'm going to definitely dive a lot into Stephen King on episode 6. I'll talk about my experience on this, on seeing him and his son, and maybe I'll show off the fact that I have an autographed copy of one of his books, which would be kind of a big thing for me. But I guess with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode. So you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You can search on Twitter. It's at The Poor Report. On Facebook, just search The Poor Report. You can like my page there. I also just got an Instagram, which is at The Poor Report as well. You can listen to my show on journeyintocomics.com. We also have a Patreon where you can get early access to all of our shows by paying just $1 a month. Or for $3 a month, you get exclusive access to things on our network that a lot of the other shows are doing. I know Journey in Comics does the Comic Club. I'm actually going to be rolling out my own Patreon exclusive content, which will be in the form of TV reviews for season premieres of the shows that are coming this season. I believe the first one I'm actually going to do is going to be on The Orville, which is the Seth MacFarlane show, and I'll probably be recording that after I wrap up this podcast. So for $3 a month, you can get early access to that and many more of those episodes over the coming weeks as these seasons premiere. And I'll probably do the same thing for the mid-season shows, and then I'll probably also do a review of the finale of that season. So look out for that. And if you want to, if there's any shows you think I should be talking about that I'm not, you can always comment or tweet me or do anything like that to kind of spread the word. So go to patreon.com to Journey into Comics, patreon.com/journeyintocomics to become a patron of our site. You can go to Journey into Comics to listen to all our other shows on the network. We have Journey into Comics, which is the flagship show. We have Journey into Wrestling, Butt Stuff, Podcastrophy, Foodies Watching Movies, which I also co-host with Nate, Veronica, and Lauren. There is the Game Addicts podcast, and I think that's all of them. I'm going to really feel bad if I missed one, but I really don't want to run through them again. So you can listen to all of our shows. We all have our social media that you can access through the website at journeyintocomics.com. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Definitely check out all of our new content. I know Podcastery is also moving to weekly, and it's a hilarious show, and their most recent episode just dropped. So definitely check out all of our new content. Thank you again for listening. I am Andrew Poor, and you are listening to The Poor Report. Have a great day. Wait, before I forget, at the end of this episode, I attach a little addendum, which is my review of the season of Westworld that I just finished. I finished it about 20 minutes before I actually recorded my little review of it, so it's a little stream of consciousness because it was just a mind-blowing show, so I didn't want to spoil it for anyone by putting it in my main set of the show, so if you want to listen to that, just stick around and listen. It's about 20 minutes. It's not really brief, but I hope you enjoy it. And I hope to talk about it more with Blaine when we get together soon. So thank you again, and stay tuned for my review of Westworld. Hey, everyone. So I just finished watching Westworld like 20 minutes ago, and I'm still reeling from everything that happened in that last episode. I mean, the season itself went by pretty quick, but like the last two episodes revealed so much, and there were so many twists and turns. And I'm going to dive right into it, but I just want to give you all, just so you know, a big spoiler warning. Like, if you haven't watched Westworld and are planning to, please stop listening now. I don't want to spoil anything, because I can't say this about Game of Thrones. I can't say this about a lot of other shows I've watched late in the game, but I was unspoiled completely going into this show, and it was so worth it. So, like I said, just stop listening if you don't want to be spoiled. Stop. Alright, so everyone that's still listening obviously wants to be spoiled. Okay, so Westworld, for those of you who are unfamiliar, is a show about this Western-style theme park, so to speak, where there are these hosts that aren't actually humans, but they have the appearance, personality, and feel of a human without, I guess, humanity. So people can go to this park for a lot of money and can have sex with, can murder, can do whatever in this world without consequence. They can't even be hurt. I think they can probably be hurt with their hands, but I don't think they can be, but they can't be shot, can't be stabbed, all these hosts are programmed to not hurt. It's like robot rules, like, I can't remember, like, the three rules. I think if you remember from the movie iRobot, which is kind of what reminded me a little bit while I was watching this show, where it's like, you must always obey orders, must not kill, and I can't remember what all the rules are. But anyway, so the show kind of opens up, giving you the hint that, like, this is the world that you don't know. There's a world outside of this with Dolores and Teddy. Teddy kind of comes in on a train to the city, and this is how everyone else kind of comes into the park, but goes in, kind of goes to the bar, which is frequented by not essentially prostitutes, but women, including Maeve, who you'll learn a lot about later in the story. And then he kind of walks out, and then he sees Dolores getting off her horse. She drops a cane, he picks it up. She's happy to see him, that he's back, and then they kind of have a little date day, and then as they're driving, not driving, that's Westworld, as they're taking their horse back, they approach the property because they want to get her back, so Dolores' father doesn't shoot him or something to that concept. It's kind of hard to remember the first episode now, but so they hear gunshot, they kind of go up, and then they see his father, or see Dolores' father and mother being murdered, and they try to intervene, and then the man in black shows up and confronts Teddy and says, like, basically, you're only here to die, and then shoots Teddy, because after Teddy tries shooting him and it doesn't work, they're just kind of not bouncing off him, but it just hits him and nothing happens. He keeps walking. Then he takes Dolores into the barn, and then it kind of cuts away. And then you kind of see how things are inside the world with how these people are programmed and put together. And I'm going to kind of sidetrack back to the intro. That song they use is just hauntingly beautiful. It gets stuck in your head, and the visuals. And I learned actually before I started recording this little review part was that it's the people who did like the effects for the intro are the same people who do the one for Game of Thrones with like the map of Westeros coming to life. So HBO definitely has people doing good things for creating this, creating their intros and doing the music, and it was just hauntingly beautiful. So getting back into the story, we find that they're being they kind of interview them after that to kind of get them reprogrammed, get diagnostics, and are able to kind of reset them and put them back into their lifestyle. So they kind of, they'll play out the same situation every time the story starts over. So Dolores is stuck in her bed, goes out, leaves her father, goes back into the city. One thing that we first kind of see that kind of starts throwing a wrench into the works is that Dolores' father finds a picture of this girl in New York City, and it starts really mess with it. He almost has like an existential crisis and doesn't know how to process it. And then that's what leads her in like the, as the story resets, to kind of sees her father after he's been out all night staring at this picture and he can't function properly. And she runs to the city to try and find a doctor. And that's where we meet William, who's there with his future brother-in-law to enjoy the park. I guess their family invested in it and they're here to just have a good time and sell the, kind of get the person who's marrying into the family used to what this place is. And he's the one who meets Loris this time instead of Teddy, and they have their own little adventure, and the whole thing kind of plays out interesting. And actually, when I first started watching this, I kind of felt for Teddy because he didn't want to be here, he didn't want to do anything wrong. I felt like that's kind of how I would be going into a place like that. It wouldn't be like you're playing, Grand Theft Auto, where you just go in and start just massacring the place. I don't think I would be that type of person if it felt that real to me. I don't think I could be one of those people who just cut loose and take one of the hordes upstairs or kill everyone in the bar or go on this. I would probably do the random side quest to find, to stop the guy robbing the bank or help the sheriff out on a quest. That's something probably I would do. I don't think I would go off the chain like a lot of these people do who go to this park. So we start to see that they're starting to have recollections. We then kind of cut to Maeve, who always dreams about her and her daughter being massacred, and she actually wakes up at one point being kind of operated on, and she ends up kind of befriending Felix, who is like their tech, who's responsible just for fixing them up and then putting them, getting them back to. They don't do anything with like the software. They're just there to fix the body, get them upstairs to get their mind wiped, and then on their way. So it's very interesting that like you see so many random naked people. It gets a little weird. But I really enjoyed it. Like, it, even though it kind of is a slow start, because it has to spend like the first few episodes getting you used to the word, and you meet Ford, who's played by Anthony Hopkins, and you get to see him play the creator, the founder of Westworld, and he's the god behind this, behind these hosts of people that he's created. And it's kind of funny seeing, like, it reminded me a little of the Aldous Huxley book, Brave New World, where they've kind of denounced God, but their God, or their, not quite deity, is Ford. I think it's kind of funny that they chose Anthony Hopkins' character to be named Ford. And I don't know if any of you have actually, read Brave New World. I recommend it. I've read it actually again recently, because I remember reading it in high school, and it still holds up. It's a nice quick read for those interested, and it's, if you like dystopian books, that's definitely something to check out. So Ford has an associate who's does a lot of the engineering behind the scenes, and that is Bernard, who's can't remember the actor's name, but I've seen him in a few things. He plays a very good job. He always kind of wears the glasses down on his nose, and is he does like the diagnostics. He talks to Dolores and Maeve and all these people to kind of run all these tests on it and make sure all their code is kind of set probably before he puts them back into operation. So as they're kind of building this whole world, we get to a point, I'm going to kind of jump ahead, is that we get to a point where you start to question who's a host. Because you already know that outside of Westworld, a lot of people who work and do like the menial tasks at the Westworld operation are also hosts. So you kind of wonder, are they, are they not one of these people? So it's something that's kind of interesting that you get to see kind of going through this, is that we get to a point, I think it's episode it's an episode where there's one of the hosts kind of goes rogue and is kind of off-site, and he just was wandering aimlessly, so they sent a QA team out there to pick him up and bring him back, and they find him trapped in a ravine, just doesn't know how to get out. So Ashley, which is a guy's name, is actually played by one of the Hemsworth brothers, but I didn't realize that, because really don't, really not paying attention to, I don't know what all the Hemsworth brothers look. I know there's a few of them that have done other things. Obviously, there's the one who plays Thor, then there's the one who's in Independence Day, and I think the Hunger Games movies. But he did a very good job, and you see him kind of propel down, and he shuts the host off by saying whatever the command is that stops them, and then he knows that all they need to bring back for their diagnostic test to figure out why he went kind of AWOL is to cut the head off. So as he's doing that, the host comes back online, even though he was told to go off, and he kind of goes insane and like starts beating up the guy, and then he uses Ashley's, the guy, rope to kind of climb back out of the pit, and he's about to go kill, I think her name's Elsie. She's a girl, she's one of the programmers under Bernard who helps that, and he's about to go just smash that with a rock, and then that's when he said just slams his own head and shuts himself down. So they so there's that whole weird side story about these hosts that aren't no longer obeying, and I'm trying to figure out how the best way to kind of go with the show, because there's a lot to go through, and giving it any sorts of review on here is a little complicated, because you really have to see the show to get the full effect. If you listen to me kind of do this rambly review, you're going to be even more confused. So I'm going to kind of jump ahead. Essentially, as the show goes, Maeve convinces Felix to change her source code, essentially. He brings her... I'm trying to think of the phrase. It's her perception levels way up, so she's able to see things and adjust her levels, so she's more aware of what's going on, so that every time she's even reactivated, she remembers what happened yesterday, so she can be shot and taken out, put back together, put back out there, and remembers exactly what happened before that, and she's able to kind of control more of her environment. Outside of the whole Westworld, Bernard realizes that the reverie that Ford had put is causing some issues, confronts him. I kind of think the best way to even continue with this. So I'm going to jump kind of to episode 7. So we know that Bernard has been having an affair with Therese, who's kind of the head honcho under Ford. She kind of runs the operations. She's like the head of operations for the whole facility of Westworld. So she's they're kind of had a more just a sexual relationship. It's they don't talk about it at work. It's just one of those things. So she ends it, and then I think they go to confront Ford about what he's been doing to these hosts, and we find that Ford then pretty much brings to the fact that Bernard is actually a host. He's been a host the whole time, and he's been a host programming other hosts and has had no aware. He's dealing with his own thing with his son being killed, or not being killed, but dying in the hospital. And just kind of him processing that. And that turns out to be kind of a programmed event, not something that he actually went through. And then he kind of orders her to kill Teresa because she was going to expose him to try and get control. So he kills her. We then see that Tessa Thompson's character, who plays a board member, is trying to also oust Ford to kind of take control of the Parker self. So she kind of fakes a problem with them to get Bernard fired. And I don't know how those two events, if they're around the same time, but obviously after the events and after Teresa's death, Ford brings Bernard back and they kind of set along their mission. At the same time, Dolores is trying to figure out her purpose. She's off with William and she's trying to figure out what her life is more than this dated. She's had her own existential crisis and realized there's more than this world that she's been living in a loop in. So a lot of this stuff's kind of culminated. We have the man in black who's on this maze hunt because he's been doing it forever. He's been at this place since the beginning and he's on his own quest to find the end of the game that they're in. So everything's kind of pushing along all these separate arcs with Maeve and Dolores and the Man in Black and Ford and Bernard. They're all stories are kind of culminating the last real two episodes. And it kind of gets to a point where you even find out that Teresa was also a host because she just freezes at one point as Bernard is kind of going back through his memories. And we've come to find out that Bernard is actually a host designed to be like Arnold, who was the person who created all these hosts in Westworld with Ford. And he realized that these hosts had a consciousness and wanted to stop the park from being opened, and realized the only way he could get through with it was to have Dolores kill him. The reason that he wanted to get rid of all that was to have Dolores take on the identity of Wyatt, and Wyatt's this overarching bad guy that you never actually see and you kind of wonder who it is. And it turns out she was Wyatt, and she with Teddy, the one who killed it, and that affects Teddy's backstory. And then you find out that I think the biggest reveal that really surprised me going in was that William is actually the man in black. That William, after 30 years since the events that he had with Dolores, because it's not been a consistent narrative. It's been kind of jumbled up because Dolores has been reliving these memories. So even though it seems like the man in black and William are on the plane at the same time, she's been living this loop so many times that it's been 30 years, and we've seen that William ages into Teddy, and that the events of what their original interaction did and what it kind of fell out with her, with William and Morgan and his finding out about this park and realizing that there's no life that he really wants to live outside of this park, and goes on a killing rampage. And then when he finds out that Dolores, kind of at the end of the day, is still can start her whole cycle over without any recollection of it, he kind of loses it and just sets himself on the next quest, which is this maze quest, which he's been doing for 30 years. And as we get kind of towards the end, we find out that Ford, once his big mission at the end was that all these hosts would no longer be under anyone's control, and we find out that all these decommissioned hosts that have been in cold storage are no longer there. And kind of in the last few moments, you see at this kind of this guy that's actually on the Westworld environment where all the board is, it's going to be a bloodbath. We see that Dolores was kind of told to, through her own self, to kill Ford and set the events moving forward. And we actually see, as the man in black, William, at the end at this gala, because we know that he's the majority shareholder in Westworld off the board. So we kind of see him smile at the end when he sees these hosts, because that's what he's wanted at the maze all along. He wanted to know that when he got to the end of the maze, that it would be setting all of these hosts free, so to speak, so they had their own consciousness and can make their own choices, and there were consequences for people doing these things. So we see that and find it, and then it just it kind of sets the whole events up for season two. And we kind of come to find out that throughout the whole season, Dolores has been hearing a voice that we believe to be Arnold that's setting them on their path, and it turns out at the end of that, it's not Arnold that's doing it, it's her own self, that it's herself talking to her, like her own consciousness. So it really sets this up, and it's just a masterful story, and it's not at all what I thought going into it. It kind of just blew my mind, and I'm not doing this justice, but I wanted to talk about it and give my thoughts and kind of digest this. And I'm sure in a few days I might have a more eloquent response, and I'm sure I know Blaine of Podcastrophy, we're gonna get to there soon, and I know he's watched it, so we're probably gonna talk about it when we get in a room together for the first time. So I'm looking forward to talking about that with him. So I guess that I'm gonna wrap up the story. Just remember, everyone, these violent delights have violent ends. I am Andrew Poor, and this is another episode of The Poor Report.